are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I think what you have to do is change your team name to Medicine Bum Armor.
That was terrible.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, it was a shot.
How long?
I can promise you that's going to be a drop at the front of the episode, though.
Well, turn 30, and then you start dropping those on us, man.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, man. But I guess
dad jokes everywhere.
That's right.
Hey, I'm not dad, so maybe that's a good thing. I mean, I guess I don't know.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 262 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm excited for today's show. One of the best guests we have, in my opinion. And no Mike, so it's even better. But just ready to talk some ball, man.
Yeah, me too. And a happy belated birthday. Matt turned 30.
Big 30, yeah. My health automatically declined overnight. So
it's all downhill from here.
I filled out a living will.
Skills and everything.
Yeah, figured out. I filled out a living will and stuff yet last night, so I'm all good to go now.
Well, we hope you'll make it through the podcast. So, joining us today is our good friend Ryan Bloomfield of Baseball HQ. Ryan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's finally nice to be on with you.
I know it's really weird because the last couple times you've been on, I've had to miss, because of.
Had to miss in quotes.
Yes, yeah. Had to miss. Yeah. But I figured since Mike isn't here tonight, I had to be here. So, someone's got a host. And that's me. So it's good to have you back on.
You don't want me doing it.
No. We tried that, remember?
Yeah. Didn't work out.
No, it did not. Ryan, wait until people where you reached on Twitter and then give yourself some plugs and talk about what you do over at Baseball HQ.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on Twitter at RyanBHQ, as in Baseball HQ. And surprisingly enough, that's where I make my fantasy baseball home, putting out weekly content there and also running Baseball HQ's social media content this year as well. So check us out, baseballhq.com. We are a subscription service. We do put out a couple of free articles every week. And also, I put together a weekly Friday newsletter that's available for free. Just go to baseballhq.com and sign up for the newsletter. It's a nice way to waste away those final hours of the work week Friday afternoon.
Definitely. It's I love what you guys do over at Baseball HQ. Mike works over at Baseball HQ, so we here at Friends of Fantasy Benefits definitely endorse getting a subscription and reading all of your guys' work.
It's well worth it. It's one of the few sites I subscribe to, so you should do it too.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right. We've got a ton to talk to. I'm hoping, before we get into kind of the fantasy baseball stuff, I just want to, warn everybody. I'm using a brand new computer and a brand new setup. And the hope is that this will actually improve any sort of audio problems in terms of volume and things like that that we may have had, though I don't think it's necessarily been bad recently at all. So hopefully there aren't any glitches, but this is kind of a test run. We're trying it out on Ryan, so we'll see how it goes.
If it doesn't work, just blame me. So
that is the plan, and that's why I'm here tonight. And one more thing we got to do before we jump in is we need to give away another free T-shirt. So we're going to do that right now. And what we're going to do is we're going to give out one of the Rec Room T-shirts. We're going to do it randomly based on, I think there are 34 five-star reviews that I can see on the Friends of Fantasy Benefits iTunes page. So what I'm going to have Ryan do is pick a number 1 through 34. I'll find that one, and that's the person who's going to win. So, Ryan, could you pick a number 1 through 34?
Yeah, we're going to go with my old Little League number 7.
Number 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. All right. This one is from RyanFree42. Hands down, my favorite fantasy podcast, coming all the way back from November 1st of last year. So, wow. Ryan, get in touch with me. Or I'm guessing it's Ryan. I don't know if it actually is. RyanFree. get in touch with me either on Twitter, via email, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. And I'll make sure you get your free t-shirt sent to you in the mail. And if you want a chance to win Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear or some of the Rec Room gear I've got, give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. And like I said, gets you eligible to win some of this free gear that we'll be giving out all season long.
I'm bummed I didn't win. That's disappointing.
No. You're ineligible.
Wow.
So had he picked your review, I just would have skipped over it to the next one.
I don't have any reviews.
Well, there we go. let's jump into some fantasy baseball topics. And let's start with Miguel Cabrera hitting the DL. It looks like it's only going to be a minimum stay on the DL, so he should be back in 10 days. Ryan, any concerns about Miguel Cabrera?
Not really. Honestly, the way that Cabrera rebounded from a tough start tells me that he wasn't super hurt. He went started 0-for-12 and then recovered well after those first few games. So if I saw deteriorating skills or more strikeouts or anything like that leading up to the injury, I'd be a little bit more concerned. But nothing in Miggy's profile really. Really concerns me at this point. Kind of crazy, though, that it's just the second time ever in Miggy's career that he's been on the DL. It seems like he's always playing hurt, but always producing. So would not read too much into it. It sounds like he's going to be back when he's eligible.
Yeah, this feels more preventative than anything else. So I'm not really worried at all. Matt, you worried?
No, and I was going to jump on that point, too. I wonder if it was a 15-day DL if he would even go on it. You know what I mean? But the extra 5 days, maybe he goes. But, no, I mean, Miggy kind of – beginning of the season, I'm talking first couple games, he kind of looked like that back injury from the WBC was kind of still bothering him because he wasn't driving the ball with authority. He's kind of going the other way, slapping singles there, but he's good enough. So, I mean, yeah, he can still, do all that. But he's only played 150 games – less than 150 games once in his career, I believe. It's something absurd. He's the Iron Man, and I don't think he gets enough credit for that. So I wouldn't really worry about this. And I mean, he's still probably the best right-handed hitter of this generation, and I don't think it's close. I mean, it was Pujols, but I think Cabrera's kind of had a longer, even longer, steadier peak than he has. So I mean, got to celebrate these guys like this, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with him. You're not drafting him for his speed, so don't worry about the groin. So you're fine.
All right, let's move on to something a little bit more impactful then, and we'll talk about Madison Bumgarner heading to the DL because he doesn't know how to drive a dirt bike. Matt, what are your thoughts on Bumgarner heading to the DL? And then you can talk about any kind of Giants news since we did have a lot of transactions today, actually, for the Giants.
Yeah, with the Bumgarner thing, I don't know what to really make of this. I mean, it's a shoulder separation, from my understanding, and bruised ribs. I guess a separation, I'm not a doctor.
In the AC joint.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I know it's not he didn't break anything. But I think it just basically popped out. Is that kind of what it's saying? But, I mean, I guess you got to really worry about what the ligaments in there are doing. I know there's a ton of them, collarbone, shoulder, all that stuff. So, I mean, that's kind of where the thing is. I guess the Giants are saying, 6 to 8 weeks? So what is that, late June return? That's a pretty big loss for them. I mean, he's never been on the DL before. We have a theme here. And he goes on the DL for this. It's kind of nuts. So hopefully this doesn't have long-term effects.
Yeah, a lot of guys, the big fear is, does this have any chance of lingering long-term?
A lot of guys I'm not a doctor, and I was just reading what a lot of people say on Twitter that are kind of good with pitching mechanics and stuff like that, and they don't seem to think it's a long-term thing, but they don't know how severe the ligament damage is, because obviously there is ligament damage because it's a sprain, right? So something. So, I mean, with that, it's just going to depend on how much that stays with them, because, I mean, I guess the AC joint is – I mean, Matt Bush is pitching through an AC joint right now for Texas. If that puts it in perspective, I mean, I know he's a reliever, But he is still pitching through an injured one. So, I mean, Bumgarner's is a little more severe than that and the bruised ribs. But it's interesting to follow for sure. If you have Bumgarner, you can't get rid of him. I mean, you have to ride him out. And Keeper Dynasty, I'm not looking to sell him either. But it's disappointing news for sure.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on the Bumgarner news?
Yeah, I'm just surprised he's human. Bumgarner has been a horse for his entire career, and then something like this, dirt bike accident. Obviously, it's a crushing blow for a guy who, like Matt mentioned, has never been on the DL before. He was a bona fide ace going, you know, at the end of the first round in 15 team leagues. I'm concerned because. And Matt alluded to this, you really don't know what he's going to be like after those 6 to 8 weeks that he's out. But again, just to echo Matt, what can you really do about it as a Bumgarner owner? Sure. I mean, you can't really trade him right now. You're not going to get any value. You have to hold on to him and just kind of hope. I mean, you invested a lot in him before the season, and you're just going to have to sink or swim with him in the second half. But a lot more concerned about Bumgarner than Miggy, we just talked about.
I think what you have to do is change your team name to Medicine Bum Armor.
That was terrible.
Well, it was worth a shot.
How long? I can promise you that's going to be a drop at the front of the episode, though.
Well, you turn 30 and then you start dropping those on us, man.
Yeah, man.
Dad jokes everywhere.
That's right.
Hey, I'm not dad, so maybe that's a good thing. I mean, I guess I don't know.
I wrote on FanGraphs on my daily the Roto write up, the daily notes that I do, 4 days a week up there. I wrote a whole kind of section on, you know, kind of what's going on with the Giants right now, and a lot of it relates to this, but not necessarily in terms of what's going on with Bumgarner. Because like you guys mentioned, what can you really do with Bumgarner? You're going to stash him on your DL. You probably used a second round or a third round pick on him, depending on the size of your league. So you're not getting rid of him. You're not selling low on him. You've just got to hold it, kind of got to hold and wait, unless you've been ravaged by injuries and you need to make some sort of move to accumulate stats. My biggest thing with this is I think this pretty much ends the Giants season effectively.
I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, the wild card is in the National League is going to be extremely wide open. But I think NL West teams falls.
This was a team that needed to, that was only going to survive on the strength of the rotation and now loses its top piece in that rotation. Cueto's still great, but Samardzija has been awful. Matt Moore has not been good. You really expect Matt Kane to even pitch the entire season, and now you're relying on Ty Block or Tyler Beatty for the next 6 to 8 weeks. Let's be honest. This is it's not the final nail in the coffin for the Giants, but it's definitely the second.
I will say, if any team can piece something together, it's your Giants. I mean, they called up just today Christian Arroyo, who I like a lot. I know a lot of guys are down on him, but you guys are probably correct in the fantasy impact is probably a bit limited. I love the hit tool. I love he's going to eventually have third base and second base and probably shortstop eligibility for UNO only squads, and that'll help. Like I said, I like the hit tool. I think the bat will play with the juice balls, which they do not have in the minor leagues, and the big gaps in San Francisco. If he works his way up to the second spot in the batting order, which I think he can, he's going to carry some value there.
That's not happening this year, though. I don't think. I
think he's. People keep citing they look at AAA. These AAA numbers this year are ridiculous, and he did exactly what you need to do. Just keep hitting, and work your way up there. But then I see people citing his kind of. I'm going to put this in quotations, his disappointing year at AA Richmond. Well, look at everyone else's numbers at Richmond. That place is a monster. The field, the ballpark is a monster. It's really tough to hit in. Look at all the pitching, the pitchers that have gone through there. And so you got to discount that. And he's not as good as his AAA numbers and not as bad as his AA numbers. But I guess I keep seeing the Joe Panic comp thrown out there.
It's the right comp.
I'm a little more optimistic. I think he's like a Martin Prado-ish, which is a little bit better than
that. That isn't that much different than Joe Panic. It's better. It's like 10 home runs, you know, 5 steals, a good average. And the thing that he doesn't have that Joe Panik has is at least he walks. Or at least Joe Panik walks. Like, this is not an exciting fantasy option. It's an exciting real-life option because I think he's going to be a very good real-life player. I think he's going to be good defensively at second or third, wherever he ends up, you know, kind of slotting in for the Giants, because he's obviously not pushing Crawford off a shortstop. Most likely he's going to play third. But, I mean, he's like Matt Duffy or Joe Panik. He's one of these Giants guys, which, you know, is going to be useful for them, but not useful for fantasy owners.
Yeah, at HQ, when we looked at Arroyo, we ranked him our number 3 fantasy prospect on the team. But more in line, Justin, with your kind of scouting report, we basically tagged him with like doubles power, you know, 10 to 15 homers. And but we do love the hit tool, like a .280 average. That is kind of like a Joe Panik type of guy.
He might be interesting like in a head-to-head points kind of format where, because he's not going to strike out a ton,
right?
That's a good point. But in, you know, in your typical roto league where doubles aren't really that exciting, you know, I mean, he's also going to be batting in what may end up being one of the worst lineups in baseball here pretty shortly. And you know, going back to the Madison Bumgarner conversation, if this team is bad and as they get close to the break, this team will sell. And it's going to sell off pieces. So just be aware of that. I mean, you're not going to necessarily make a move right now because of that. But Johnny Cueto has an opt-out that he's already said he's going to take at the end of this season. So he will get moved at the deadline if the Giants are not in contention. Eduardo Nunez, Nick Hundley, Matt Cain, Aaron Hill also are free agents at the end of the season. They could get moved. And wherever they get moved to will drastically improve or lower their fantasy value depending on if they're hit or a pitcher, because they'll be moving out of AT&T Park. So just kind of keep an eye on that, especially for Cueto and Nunez. They're going to, you know, Nunez's stock probably will go up a little bit. Cueto's stock will definitely go down a little bit depending on where they move to. All right.
Yeah, it's a valid point. I mean, it's hard for me to envision the Giants being sellers, but I guess it is what it is.
Well, it's an odd year. And I'm sure
it's not here. That's right.
Oh man!
And I'm sure if they could, they would try to move Span's contract or Hunter Pence's contract. You know, both of them are free agents after 2018 and are owed a fair amount of money.
If you're watching the game now, Arroyo's on deck, about to face Rue.
Mm. I am not watching the game because I'm talking with you guys.
Where's your head at?
I'm doing both.
Cam Bedrosian hits the DL. This is one of the things that was kind of the red flag with him, as he does have a long injury history in the minor leagues. So I'll throw it to you, Ryan. Who is the closer for the Angels, and do you really care?
I don't really care, and I don't think anyone listening should care either. Bud Norris got the first save. I guess we're recording this on Monday, got the first save on Saturday night. I guess Bud Norris is the guy, but you do not want to waste your fab money on Bud Norris. This is still Bud Norris, even though he's been good, 11 strikeouts, 3 walks in his first 10 innings, and he's missing bats. He's not going to hold up. He's had a whole career of just being crap, so... Norris is temporary. I would just hedge your bets on hopefully Bedrosian returning. I like Bedrosian's skills. Don't waste your fab money chasing saves in Anaheim right now. You're just going to pull your hair out.
Matt, do you agree?
Wasn't Bud Norris? Yeah, I do. Bud Norris is not worth throwing some fab at. Bedrosian had, what, 3 saves and 6 appearances. So, I mean, he was kind of getting – he was the closer, and – They really never announced him as the full-time closer, right? They kind of really never did.
No, they said they were going to use him in the highest leverage situation, which some people read into the idea that maybe he wouldn't be closing all the time. Sometimes he'd be using the 8th, sometimes in the 9th. But, I mean, it was pretty obvious after the first week. He was the dude.
The lack of talent in that bullpen kind of makes the decision
especially,
easy.
Especially, you know, I mean, with Houston Street on the DL – and then Andrew Bailey following him there very, very quickly.
Socha had no other options.
At what point do we as a baseball and fantasy community start like looking at the Angels as like the Mets or the Orioles in terms of not being able to keep pitchers healthy?
I think we're already there.
I mean, because like they can't keep anyone yeah. healthy.
Garrett Richards just went on the 60-day DL. Andrew Heaney, last few years.
Nick Tropiano. CJ Wilson. Tyler Skaggs. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's getting ugly. But I agree with you guys. I'm not really buying into this situation. You know, you might actually, you know, think about Blake Parker, who's actually been very good to start the year. He could probably get a couple save chances. So if you're like an AL only, he might still be around.
Wasn't Bud Norris the guy that made some like racist comments like a couple years back about like people needing to speak English or something if they're going to play baseball here or something like that?
I don't know, but he definitely has the name that would make you sound like that was him.
I was just, Bud Norris could have made that comment. Yes,
I'm fairly certain that he did. I don't know. I'll have to look that up. But either way, don't waste your money on Bud Norris because he has a long track record of being terrible. Except when he faces the Cardinals, he actually does well against them. But
yes, he did. In September of 2015, he said some stupid racist stuff that I'm not going
to repeat. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, don't repeat it.
All right, let's move on, talk about some hot players. Kevin Kiermaier has started out the year fairly hot. Ryan, what are your thoughts on Kiermaier for this year?
Yeah, he's been hot out of the gate. From what I see so far, kind of a mixed bag. On the plus side from Kiermaier, I like how he's sustaining his walk rate from 2016. He walked at a 5% clip in 2015, doubled that up to 10%, and so far through 72 at bats, he's still at 11%. So he's getting on base, and Tampa runs him often, and he's got speed. So I think Kiermaier is a legit 30 stolen base threat. We've got HQ. We've got him projected for 32 wow. steals on the season. So
it was you guys who was inflating his draft price.
It was us. And we actually, in our baseball forecaster, in addition to the speed, we said he could hit 20 home runs as an upside Whoa. Projection as well. So blame us.
Yeah, because I mean, Kiermaier was going. You know, in some drafts he was going, you know, fairly decently priced, got him in a couple of redrafts. And then there are other places where he was, especially AL only, he was just going for obscene amounts of money. I was out in a lot of those kind of deeper formats or formats with industry folk. Matt, what are your thoughts on Kiermaier?
He's kind of, for me, still the same guy as he was last year. I mean, he's one of the best defensive players in the major leagues. He's got a cannon arm in center field. The thing that sets him back on offense, I do like the speed, but the thing that sets him back on offense is he actually led the major leagues last year in infield pop-ups. And for a player with his skill set, that's not ideal. And it was like a monster, like 25% infield fly ball rate. That's absurd. I'm looking at that stat like right now from last year. Second highest was Jose Bautista at 18%.
That's crazy because Kiermaier's not really a fly ball hitter in general. That's interesting.
I'm willing to chalk it up as a fluke, but I mean, right now his percentages are unfortunately they're not that far off of last. I mean, they're obviously lower, but they're not as much lower as they need to be. But he's hitting the ball on the ground a lot more this year, 55% on the ground as opposed to 41%. So if he can, and I think that speaks to the 40-point raise in the batting average because he's, you know, utilizing his own skill set more. But Kiermaier, he's got one of the highest floors because he's going to play every day because the defense is absurd. Just as long as he stays healthy, you can expect what. I mean, his 14 and 15 were, he had 263, you know, 315, 298 OBP. He's going to be around that same area now, a little improvement. He's at 278 now, 366 OBP. The walk rate has grown. It's up to 10.8%, which would be a career high, over 1% over last year. The strikeouts are way up. But he just needs to keep hitting the ball on the ground more, and he's going to post better numbers just because of his skill set. So it's too early to tell, obviously, because it takes a while for those rates to stabilize. He's only at 83 plate appearances, but it's worth watching because if that growth continues, he's going to be a nice, valuable player, kind of like a younger version of what like a Brett Gardner could do for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that comp. The thing I love about a guy like Kiermaier is his defense is so good that, you know, even if he goes through, you know, points where he struggles throughout the season, they're not going to sit him. He's going to play every game that he's healthy. The thing that I don't love is sometimes that defense gets him hurt. And so hopefully he can stay on the field this year because he did, you know, miss, 50 games last year because of injury. So I'm encouraged with what I see so far. I'm a little bit worried that he's striking out a little bit too much, a little bit more than I would like to see, but he walks enough and he steals so many bases, or he will steal so many bases, that I think he is a nice guy to add if for some reason he's still out there on waiver wires. Let's move over to a guy who is available in a ton of leagues and has been pitching really, really well. Until, of course, tonight, as we're talking, he is not pitching quite as well as he has his three previous starts. And that is just the luck of doing a podcast, because as soon as you put out show notes, some guy fucks it up for you.
Yep. That happens. That'll happen later on, too.
Yeah, I know. It just happens all the time. So, I'm talking about Jason Vargas, who through his first three starts was absolutely destroying it. A 0.44 ERA in his first three starts. Of course, tonight he's given up a home run, which has caused him to have three earned runs, so raising his ERA up over one, which is, of course, isn't that bad. He's a soft tossing lefty, still kind of coming back from Tommy John surgery about a year and a half ago. Matt, what are your thoughts on Jason Vargas?
He's getting a lot of buzz. Obviously, he's been great. He's getting a lot of buzz on Twitter, I guess, because he seems to have changed his grip on his changeup. And, I mean, obviously that's a good thing, but there's no way that's what solely is responsible for what he's doing now. He's getting quite lucky, obviously, with a 0.44 ERA, what I'll allude to is a 93% strand rate. I think that's coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Home run for fly ball is a whopping zero because he hasn't allowed any, which normally that's kind of a little issue for Vargas. And he doesn't blow any of the doors off velocity-wise. And I mean, its velocity is right in line with the adjustment you make. If you subtract about a half mile an hour off the fastball, which you're supposed to do, he's right around 86, which he has been the last 2-3 years. It's not a very exciting option. It's a good ballpark to pitch in for his fly ball tendencies, though, and the outfield defense in Kansas City is about the only good thing they have, as far as their position players go. So just ride out this hot streak, which it looks like it might have ended tonight, but he's not going to all of a sudden turn into useless either. So he's a guy like we kind of talked about Big Irv and Santana like a week ago on this podcast, and he's kind of similar to that where he's a veteran, he's not going to hurt your ratios, keep riding him out because you paid nothing for him, and then when he sucks, just cut him.
I'm going to correct you on one thing, but I do agree with you for the most part. His velocity is virtually this, if you deduct the half mile an hour, is virtually the same as last year, but last year was only 12 innings because he was coming back from TJ.
This is true.
Coming back to his 2015 and before years, he'd actually be closer to a mile and a half down on his fastball, which is a little concerning for me because now you're talking about a guy who's throwing his fastball sitting at 86 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And I know it's from the left-hand side, and his control's been great. I watched his start against the Giants, and I mean, he is just painting the corners right now.
Yeah.
Which is great, and that's awesome. But, I mean, at some point, the velocity will catch up to him.
Yeah.
And so for me, I wouldn't even try to ride the hot streak because I think there are going to be some blow-ups coming. I believe his next start is against someone crappy. I can't remember who it is off the top of my head. And he's pitching against Chicago tonight. He's lit him up for three runs so far in five innings. But I'm not buying it.
After Ryan gives us analysis of Vargas, I want to ask you guys who would you rather. I think is rather interesting. So go ahead with that.
Ryan, tell me what you think about Vargas.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I mean, yeah, the stats were great. Even the skills were great. Even tonight with the bad outing, it had five strikeouts and no walks. But you got to keep in mind, it's just four starts. This guy has 1,200 career innings of let's say subpar performance.
Yeah.
He's got a career, 4.11 ERA. Typically with, especially this early in the season, I'm trying to just go one level deeper than the skills and just try to look for something that might have changed. You guys touched on the velocity, which is actually lower down at 86. The control's been great, but not really any kind of new pitches. The new changeup grip maybe, but
yeah,
this is a guy that's going to... He's going to live on the corner. The second he misses the corner, he's going to get blown up. So you've got to sell Jason Vargas. I'm not buying in.
Here's the thing. I mean, he started the year against Houston, who really struggled in that opening series. Then he pitched home versus Oakland, who is not a very good team, and then the Giants, who, like I mentioned, are throwing out some of the worst lineups in baseball right now. And tonight he's pitching against the White Sox, who is throwing out one of the worst lineups in baseball. And they still got to him for four runs, only three of them earned. So I'm just not buying it. So, Matt, you want a couple would you rathers?
I have one just for you. I mean, I saw this interesting debate on Twitter. I forget who it was. I apologize. I think it was Matt Modica, but I'm not 100% sure. He was debating, talking about somebody about a league where they did, you know, the Fab went through Monday morning. Jason Vargas rest of the season or Jordan Montgomery for the Yankees?
That's hard.
I mean, it's obviously better for an AL only play, but I think AL only, these guys should be owned by now, definitely.
I'm gonna go with Montgomery because I believe the strikeouts will be there the entire way, and I believe that there is a better chance that he stays healthy. The problem with Montgomery is I don't know if his role is secure, and I don't think Vargas is going anywhere.
Yeah. Ryan, any thoughts on that? Or
I'd go Montgomery. I just like the upside of Montgomery. And again, it's all relative. Even if Montgomery doesn't have the role all year, at least he's not going to put up the numbers that I expect Jason Vargas to. I think Vargas is actually going to be a negative to your lineup unless you're in a deep AL only. But I think you've got to speculate on Montgomery over Vargas.
I think it's a matter of like what you really need. If you're looking for innings.
Yeah.
Like, I think you can make the argument that Vargas will more than likely give you... Well, but I mean, how many innings is he really going to throw? I mean...
Well, he's in his walking, so...
He only threw 12 innings, though, last year.
And Kansas City doesn't have anybody... Their rotation sucks. Their team is pretty bad, actually. But, I mean, they have... It's really nobody else to go to. I mean, they got Matt Strom in the bullpen, and he's been roughed up. And I think he was the next guy up for the rotation spot. Miguel Amante is still around there. I think he's... kind of the swing man in AAA now, Kyle Zimmer. Which don't get me started on that, because how unhealthy he's been. if he's healthy, he needs to be up now because
before he breaks.
It's what you're wasting time. But anyways, on that, and I guess another good comparison with Jason Vargas is Lance Lynn, because Lance Lynn is also a guy that was a year and a half plus removed from Tommy John surgery, and he's doing pretty well this year too, command and stuff. And they're both in walk years, so it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you.
I'd rather have
like Lynn more.
Yeah, I agree
with
that.
I don't even like Lynn that much.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He's in the National League. He's younger. He pitches for the better team. I believe his strikeout rate will be higher at the end of the day. I believe his ratios will be lower. Honestly, I don't think that's a particularly close.
Yeah, I don't think it was. I mean, I was just saying it's interesting that both of those guys who had pretty much 2 years off from Tommy John are both coming back doing well. I mean, it's... No, they're not rushed back by any means.
Let's move on to Wei-Yin Chen, who had a really nice start here the other day. Ryan, what are your thoughts on Chen?
Chen's one of the more boring pitchers in all of baseball. I watched his seven innings of no-hit ball against the Mariners, and it looked impressive, but I think it was more the Mariners' approach in that game than anything else. Chen only missed five bats that whole night.
Oh, so, man.
Just those five swinging strikes. So I liked him entering the season. His ERA has been all over the place. 2015, he threw out a 3.34 ERA in 191 innings, and then last year that just kind of tumbled up to 4.96. He's always had great control, and it's been backed up by a good strike percentage and first pitch strike rate. So I like the control. I think his ERA just split the difference between 15 and 16, and that'll get you just below like 3 ERA. But without the strikeout upside, he's a back end guy for me, and not much more than that.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Wei-Yin Chen?
Yeah, Chen is. I know Justin. I know you loved Chen going into last year,
and I liked him as kind of a sleeper guy coming into this year as well.
Yeah, and that's fair. And I kind of like him as a nice back end of your staff guy, just to set your ratios up. But he's a really weird guy who made the move from the American League to the National League, from Camden Yards of all places to the Marlins Park, and watched his home run rate go up, which is
by a lot, like a whole lot.
Kind of bad. to me, and you know, he missed some time last year with an injury. I can't remember what it was. I thought, I think it was shoulder, but I'm not sure. Or no,
his elbow.
Elbow. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I see he's been pitching with a partial tear.
Yeah, I was about to talk about that because that to me is scary.
It's the Masahiro Tanaka time bomb, except it's not nearly the draft price you paid. So if you lose Chen after, you know, 8 solid starts or whatever, I mean, God forbid that happened, but you lose him after 8 solid starts, what'd you pay for him? A 20-something round pick? Okay. You know what I mean? So you take what you can until he breaks. But, I mean, he's a solid back-end option.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you ride the hot streak, you know, if there is one, for as long as you can. But, I mean, if I could sell him coming off of this start, I would try to. If I could get anything more than I paid for on draft day, maybe try to buy low on a guy, you know, somewhere else. I would definitely try to because, yeah, I mean, according to Tim Healy of the Sun Sentinel, one of the Marlins beat writers, he's pitching with a partial tear in the UCL, and he's receiving some sort of special treatment in between each start.
Uh-oh. Is it the PRP ones that seem to work very well?
Yeah, I don't know what kind of snake oil they're selling in Miami, but I don't want to have anything to do with that. So I'm not investing on him off the waiver wire right now, if that's what you're thinking about.
Man, that's a hell of a roller coaster ride for Chen owners. Goes 7 or 8, whatever, no-hit innings, and then you find out he has a torn UCL.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. So if I can get anything for him right now, I would probably do that. And I mean, I've liked Chen in the past. You know, Matt mentioned last year I was in on him. I was loving the move, you know, because his one issue really in Baltimore was giving up the home run. I was like, oh, he's moving to the National League. He's moving to, you know, a great big ballpark after having to pitch in Camden. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, he was hurt, you know, obviously, but still there were some other issues there too. Mental or pitch mix. I don't know what's going on, but I'm definitely not buying this as something that can be sustained over the long haul, especially with the injury. So I'm not interested in Wei-Yin Chen. Let's move on over to Austin Hedges, who started off really, really slow and then has been hot. Matt, you're a prospect guy. What are your thoughts on Austin Hedges?
He was a hard player to evaluate because, I mean, the monster season he had in the PCL last year, which is nice to have. I mean, obviously you'd rather him have even if you're worried about it translating, because, I mean, that's confidence, and he was pretty terrible the year before in the major leagues. But 326, 353, 597 line in the PCL is pretty damn good, 21 home runs. I'm still not all in on him now, and I mean, he's showing the obvious contact issue still. 29% K rate, 175, 230 is the OBP and batting average OBP. That's terrible. 5 home runs, though. I mean, it's kind of all or nothing approach. And
in the last week.
I don't know when he turned into Mike Zunino, but I guess that's what he is now. Oh. But that was just for you, Ryan. I know how much you love Zunino. But Hedges, I mean, he's still an all-world defender, so he's going to play every day, and as he should, because the Padres need every little bit of, you know, every little advantage they can get with that pitching staff. But, I mean, I guess as a catcher and for fantasy, he's going to be relevant just because of the home runs. But, I mean, you always have to be looking for an upgrade, even at the catching position with him.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Austin Hedges?
Yeah, I think the back end of Matt's thing there, especially in a catcher, you got to look at that. If you're in a single catcher league, Hedges, I don't think, is rosterable. But in a two-catcher league, you're really just looking for anyone, A, that plays, or B, has a pulse. And Hedges is showing a pulse. He's long been known as a glove-first, you know, catcher as a prospect. But Matt mentioned that power outbreak. He actually, you know, 10 home runs in his first 113 at-bats last season. And then he broke his hand in May. So that kind of stunted
his... Yeah, good call on that.
Yeah, it stunted that whole second half. So, you know, need to see that hold over a larger sample. I'm certainly not ready to call Hedges, a breakout or anything at catcher, but the hard hit balls are there. He's hitting the ball in the air. Yes, he's striking out Zunino style, but but at least he's making hard contact. And again, as your second catcher at 24 years old with, again, some prospect pedigree, you know, I would take a shot on him in a two-catcher league.
I think this is what the kind of stuff you're going to get from Hedges, too, is there are going to be times in which he's super hot and, you know, you got to ride the wave. And then there are going to be times where, you know, his first 2 weeks of the season were super cold. And you're going to have to deal with those. So, I mean, even with his hot streak, which over the course of the last week, he's batting over 300 with five home runs, he's still only batting 175 for the year. So, I mean, you're going to have to take kind of the good with the bad with Hedges. I think he's best suited for two catcher, 15-team leagues or deeper. You know, I think in terms of probably 12 teams or shallower or one catcher leagues, I just think there's going to be more consistent guys out there on the waiver wire. If you want to stream the position, go ahead. But I think there's safer options that aren't going to give you a negative in certain categories.
The big thing with Hedges as a prospect was he was looked at as an 80 grade defender, which is absurd. Mm-hmm. And the arm is an 80. And even with that 80 grade on defense and 80 grade as an arm, there were still questions or not if he could be an everyday catcher because the bat was so poor. And I think we're kind of seeing that now. I mean, obviously, it kind of played itself out in 2015 when he got his little cup of coffee and hit 168, 38 strikeouts and 137 at-bats. He's not far off that pace now. And so, yeah, I mean, he had a little buzz going into the season because of the numbers he put up in the PCL. And with the catching position practically being death row last year, I mean, it's not a shock that people took a chance on Hedges. But like I said, do better than Austin Hedges.
All right. Accidentally skipped Michael Brantley, so we'll go back to him. And he's been hot since starting this year. He missed pretty much the entire season last year because of shoulder issues, only playing in 11 games. He's already played in 15 this year, hitting three home runs, 310, 385, 517 triple slash. Ryan, what are your thoughts on Michael Brantley?
Yeah, I mean, as a guy, I had zero shares of Brantley after last year's fiasco. I just couldn't trust the shoulder. You know, entering 2016, Brantley, you know, was supposed to be out like the whole first half, and then it was all of April, and then he was like on the opening day roster. So I didn't really believe anything coming out of Cleveland with Brantley's outlook this season. So I pretty much avoided him and kind of paying for that so far. He's hitting the ball hard, which is for me the biggest thing I want to see to make sure that that shoulder is healthy. 52% hard hit ball rate over his first 58 at bats, so that's obviously a great sign. He's sacrificing a little bit of contact for that. He's striking out quite a bit more. Brantley's always been a high contact guy. His contact rate has always been, you know, upper 80s, 90%. That's down to 76% so far. Swinging and missing a little bit more, too. Brantley, throughout his career, has had a swinging strike rate 3-4%, which is excellent. And that's up to 7%, which is still really good. But it might show us that Brantley's a little bit overcompensating for that power. But again, biggest takeaway from the first month of the season is that he looks healthy. He's driving the ball, 25% line drive rate with the hard contact. So, you know, can't jump all in yet, but it's a great sign for his health.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Brantley?
Yeah, like Ryan, I had no shares of him this year. I was kind of staying away. He was an interesting player because I think he went in different spots and not even like way different rounds in every draft I was in this year. I mean, the opinions are obviously rightly so.
Depending on when you had your draft, too, because, I mean, there was sure. A lot of news like that was, mm-hmm. You know, it kind of changed weekly with the news on when he was actually going to be able to play.
But, yeah, I mean, and I want to kind of, it's a good point, and I want to piggyback off of what Ryan said, and it looks like he's changed who he is as a hitter. He's kind of fallen in love with the power stroke, it looks like, getting the ball in the air. 25% homer to fly ball rate isn't likely to stay where it is. But, I mean, it's really hard to say because it looks like he has sacrificed some contact and power. That's for sure. That's the first thing that jumps out of the stat line for you. But it's working so far. It's only been 15 games, so it's hard to draw too much conclusion in that 65 plate appearances. But that's what it appears to be. And he's even chipped in three stolen bases, which is nice.
Yeah, I like you guys, was not in on Michael Brantley. And I've been actually all out on Michael Brantley for a number of years now. I never really... was a big fan, and I was definitely out last year. I got a lot of shit last year coming into the season of where I ranked him, but it was because I didn't trust the health, and that mm-hmm. proved to be right. And this is why I'm not buying him now. I just don't trust the health. You know, if he ends up staying healthy for, you know, 150-plus games or whatever this year and puts up another, you know, season like he did in 2014 when he went 20-23 with 327 average, good for him. It's not going to happen on any of my teams because I'm just a little bit too risk-averse for a guy like him. I mean, what he's done so far has been impressive, but, I mean, he's also striking out, you know, at a higher rate than I think he pretty much has his entire career. Like Matt mentioned, he's just kind of giving up a little bit of that contact for power. I just don't trust the shoulder, which has caused him to miss a ton of games in the last 2 years, to be able to stay healthy the entire year. I mean, look what we've had with, like, Jason Kipnis having the same kind of issues because of his reoccurring shoulder problems. That for a hitter, if you've got shoulder problems, you're going to have those for a while, and I don't believe it.
If you have Brantley, I mean, good for you because you can bank those numbers. But I'm going to ask you a quick question. Would you rather, for the rest of the season, and we'll say we have five outfield spots in a 5x5 league, would you rather have Michael Brantley or Jason Hayward?
I would take Brantley. I'm not a big Hayward guy.
I think Hayward's changed anything with his swing, though.
He hasn't. The swing is mechanically the same.
His hands in a different spot.
Yeah, the swing is mechanically the same, but the hard contact results are kind of intriguing for Hayward right now. It's like I said, it's right now a short stretch. You can't draw too many conclusions from all this. But I mean, I kind of like what I've seen from Hayward so far. So I'd probably go Hayward. I just thought that was interesting. Who would you rather the rest of the year?
I would go Hayward just because I have more faith that he is going to make it through the entire season.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So, I mean, that to me, and you know, I mean, defensively, he's so good. Even if he struggles, he's going to get thrown out.
Last year. Yeah. I mean, he played the whole year last year. So, yeah.
So, and I mean, even last year in like a really bad year where he hit 230, still hit 7 home runs and stole 11 bases. There's no reason to think he can't. I mean, he's already got 2 home runs and 1 stolen base this year. I mean, there's no reason to think he can't at least steal 20 bases, even if he struggles. So, yeah, I'm going to take Hayward, but it's just based on health. It's not based on skills.
Okay, interesting.
Let's move over to some cold players, and we'll definitely.
This one hurts you. This one hurts you.
This hurts me in a lot of leagues. The next few, actually. This one right here, it's Kevin Gausman, which really, really hurts. I'm gonna ask you, Matt, can you talk me off the ledge with Kevin Gausman?
I was kind of off Gausman this year because I just thought, not particularly because of him, I just thought there was better pitcher values to be had when he was going in the draft. I didn't think he was really a value. And watching him this year, I mean, the rate stats with the line drive percentage, ground ball rate, fly ball rate, are all kind of in line with what he was doing last year. Obviously, he's a better pitcher than the ERA indicates. He's been roughed up, to say the least. Strikeouts are a bit down. The walks, though, man. The walks are up to 5.6 per nine. They're only 24 innings, but that's alarming. And the thing with Gausman is he's got a really good fastball. And that's, everyone knows that 95 miles an hour with the adjustment is about where it was last year, 94.5. And then the problem with him is he has no off-speed pitches whatsoever. And right now, I've only watched about 2.5 of his starts. To me, it looks like he's trying to force the slider and turn it into something that a reliable off-speed pitch, and he can't locate it. And then he's falling behind. He'll get ahead with the fastball, and then he's throwing 2 sliders, and it's 2-1 count. Here comes the fastball crushed. And he's in a bad ballpark for that, and he's trying to make something out of what he doesn't have, and I think he's better off just doing the fastball-heavy approach like he has been in the past. I mean, it's good. It's admirable that he's working on things. And one thing I'm kind of a bit worried about also is he's decreased his splitter percentage, and I know this might be nothing, but splitter is often the number one pitch associated with arm injuries, and he's cut that down, so it may be something to look into. But, I mean, he needs another pitch with the fastball immediately, and right now he doesn't have it.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Kevin Gausman?
Yeah, the pitch mix for me is really what, and Matt was alluding to this. Gausman, he threw a curveball last year, and he's ditched that completely in favor of this new slider.
And it's not good. He can't locate it.
He can't locate it, and nobody's swinging at it. his swing rate on balls outside the zone, which is typically where you're putting sliders, is down to 26%. And that used to be a lot higher, 33%, 34%. I don't know why he's throwing this slider. I've heard he's had, you know, a little bit of a blister history and maybe a curveball. And we've seen this obviously with Rich Hill. Curveball can be harder on your fingers and potentially Gausman's going to a slider to avoid that. But that's really the major thing that I see wrong. Release points are stable, velocity is stable. I don't think he's hurt. I don't think it's anything mechanical. I don't know. I just wonder if he's hiding something with that ditching of his curveball.
Yeah, for me, I watched his start. Was it yesterday? I think it was. He's having a real hard time commanding his fastball. I mean, he's not. I mean, if you watch the glove that they're putting up there, he is just all over the place. The glove is having to move, you know, way away from the original setup target. And then when he does, does kind of put it somewhere near the glove, it's usually up. He's not getting it down into the zone, and people are just crushing it. I think this, you know, remember, you know, one of the things we talked about when earlier in the season when Arizona, you know, signed Chris Iannetta and Jeff Mathis, is we said, like, this is a really boring move in terms of fantasy value, except for their pitching staff, because they were getting much better framing catchers and much better game callers than Wellington Castillo. And I think that may be playing into this. I think
to be fair, Matt Wieters isn't very good either, but no, Castillo,
But, I mean, I think this is... One, he's having some command issues, so I actually wouldn't be surprised if you guys were right, if there was like a fingernail or a blister issue going on, because it does not seem like he is getting very good grip or very, very good feel on his pitches. And this could be a cold weather thing, because some pitchers just struggle a little bit earlier on in cold weather, and there's been some rain in Baltimore. So this may be an issue of weather, and maybe he gets better as the weather warms up. But right now, I think I wouldn't drop him. I could understand some people doing it. I think you got to sit him on your bench until he kind of figures some things out, because I am not feeling very confident about a guy that I've loved for a very long time and is actually, like Matt mentioned, is actually killing me right now in fantasy leagues.
I think I would cut him, to be honest.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't, I never really, I like the upside, but it's not going to come this year. The division is terrible to pitch in, and I'm just not. I just keep thinking there's way more pitching values to be had later on, and a lot of other guys I'd rather just have. I know that's boring analysis, but I'm just not in on Gausman at all anymore, for this year, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, here's the one thing I will say to my earlier point about weather. I went over to his game log to kind of see where he's been starting. He's had five starts so far this year. His four bad ones have been at home versus Toronto, at home versus the Yankees, on the road at Cincinnati, and at home versus Boston. And a couple of those included some rainy weather games. His only good or decent start of the season, wasn't necessarily a good start, was at Toronto in the Dome. So I'm wondering if maybe there's a combination of maybe some issues, just getting some some grip issues going on that may be affecting him.
Yeah, I wouldn't cut Gausman yet. I mean, obviously it depends on your league context, but I mean, he did flash some impressive skills. I mean, even the last two seasons, I think five starts. If you've got room, I wouldn't cut bait quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, his start yesterday against Boston, it actually wasn't all bad. It was just when he left it up in the zone, he just got crushed. He gave up three home runs in that game. And I mean, that was the real issue, was he left three really bad pitches up in the zone and paid for it.
I mean, I'm definitely going to watch his next start, because it's against the Yankees again, and this is his second look in a month at them. So I think that's important to see how he handles it. I want to say he's at home. I that might be wrong on that, but I think that's going to be something to watch. I mean, his first time against the Yankees, 4 2/3, 4 earned runs, 8 hits, 3 walks, 4 Ks is not good. So we'll see how he does second time through. And lefties are torching him this year. It's been a small sample, but lefties are obliterating him. That's probably because of the curveball and you know, a lack of off-speed pitch.
Let's move on to Keon Broxton, who started off the year very slowly, though seems to be maybe starting to pick it up. I believe he hit a home run tonight, actually. Let's see, let me double check that. Nope, not tonight. It was the other day. He's gone 0 for 4 tonight.
Way to go.
It sounded good, though.
Yeah, no, but before tonight, he'd gone like 4 for 10, double, triple, stolen base in his last three games, so maybe he's starting to pick it up. Ryan, are you concerned at all with Keon Broxton's start?
This is the guy that people paid for. Broxton was one of the larger risk-reward players in all of fantasy baseball entering the season, just because of the counting stat upside that he has, hitting in Miller Park and running for a Milwaukee team that has a green light with everybody. But you knew you were going to get a bad batting average because the contact rate was so bad. And unfortunately, the contact rate's gotten even worse so far this season. I was hoping he'd build on the contact gains in the second half from last year. He upped his contact rate from 48% up to 62%, which is still awful, but better. But that's really gone to nothing so far. He's striking out in 42% of his plate appearances, hacking at everything, a 16% swinging strike rate. The big thing for me too is the walk rate. He's not drawing any walks. Broxton's really pressing at the plate. He walked 15% of the time last year, down to 5% so far this year. Wouldn't write him off. He's such a streaky guy that you know, you never know when he's going to go off and have a week with, you know, three home runs and five steals. But it's certainly not good that he's not progressing at the plate in his age 27 season with those awful plate skills. It's a concern for me.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Keon Broxton?
This is one of my guys going into the season, man. The power-speed combination, I loved it. I loved the walks. I loved the high strikeout total is obviously a problem. But the biggest thing for me is the walks have disappeared. 14.8% last year in his brief 2016 sample. He's down to 5.3% walk rate now. To be honest, it looks like he's just pressing, which is understandable because he's hitting 161 after tonight's 0 for 4. And the biggest thing in Milwaukee is their AAA outfield is stacked. It's Lewis Brinson. It's Brett Phillips. I know Kirk Nieuwenhuis just got sent down there. They got Michael Reed up there. All those guys are serviceable major league players, or future major league players, and maybe he's feeling a little heat from behind him. I don't know, but I hope he gets it together. I love Keon Broxton. I thought he was one of the most explosive. I think he still is one of the most explosive players in fantasy baseball. And he was a guy I was looking forward to high upside play to kind of put me over the top in a lot of leagues. But it's been dreadful. It's been borderline. I keep hovering over his name every day to drop him and for somebody else. And I haven't pulled the trigger on it yet.
Not yet.
I'm getting awful close though. But it is the thing that keeps saving me is he has a 246 OBP in 17 games, but he still has three stolen bases. I mean, that's just wait for that OBP to tick back up to the strong levels because he does have a good walk rate.
Yeah, he's attempted five steals so far, and he's gotten on base like six times. So
yeah,
at least he's running.
Yeah, so I mean that's the thing that's kind of saving me because I know he's going to hit better than this. I just maybe a phantom DL trip coming soon. I don't know. We'll see.
Here's the thing: last year he started off April with in 16 at bats, 18 plate appearances, zero hits.
Yeah, that's rough.
He just may be a kind of a slow starter. You know, and we don't have a long enough track record to really know, but I'm going to bank that he's going to be fine, that the Brewers are just going to keep running him out there. I mean, I know you mentioned all those minor league guys, but they're not coming up before the Super 2 deadline, which should be, what, end of May, early June?
I was reading some, it depends. I mean, because Super 2 deadline is also going to depend on how much time they're up next year, which you could easily restrict it again. I mean, assuming that they come up and don't go back down.
The Brewers have shown, at least with guys like Orlando Arcia, that once they bring him up, they're bringing them up to stay. They're not shuffling them back and forth.
Yeah, so then I would assume, I think you're in the ballpark of like May 23rd or something like that. So yeah, I'm with you.
I'm going to say it's actually closer to Memorial Day, you know, which isn't that far removed from May 23rd. But I would, you know, I was looking, someone on Twitter, and I'm blanking on who it was, posted kind of the last few seasons, what date ended up being, or how many days of service time it took, and what date that meant for the Super 2 status, and it was all around at like the last week of May.
Okay, it makes sense.
So I'm gonna bank that Brinson and Phillips, any of those guys, aren't coming up before them, because I just don't believe that the Brewers even consider themselves contenders, even with how great their offense is right now.
A lot of it's going to depend on what they do with Ryan Braun too.
Yeah, their pitching is just so bad. And I mean, it's not like Domingo Santana is killing it either. He's sucking up the joint. So, I mean, they could easily replace him. I think they're going to let Broxton figure this out. And I think he's going to be fine. Yes, they're going to be cold streaks, because this dude strikes out 30% of the time. You know, I mean, I made the joke earlier in the off season, because someone was all like, oh, he could go 20-30. And I was like, he will probably go 20-30-40 being his strikeout rate. and so that's what you drafted. Like, you gotta know what you're getting into. You can't draft Chris Carter's and then be upset that he has, a 35% strikeout rate. It's just that's who you got. You had to plan for this going in. He's not the kind of guy you want in a head to head format, because he's so hot and cold, but he's also the guy that is going to win you a couple weeks here and there. So
I think the Brewers are the lesson this year on the high upside fantasy plays, with Broxton struggling out of the gate and Domingo Santana struggling out of the gate. Hernan Perez, but then Eric Thames.
Eric Thames. Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about Julio Teheran, who struggled here as of late. Is this just a blip in the, kind of a blip, or is something more serious, Ryan?
I think it's just a blip. Again, four starts, and I'm not even that big of a Teheran guy. I've always kind of been in the camp that he's been a little bit overrated in fantasy circles, because he had such a high prospect pedigree in his first two seasons, full seasons in the majors were so good. But he's been one of those guys who's always kind of outpitched his stats, or his skills, sorry. But I wouldn't be too concerned. You look at the ERA on the season, 3.52. He gave up 7 runs in one start, in his last start against the Nationals. Before that, granted, against some bad teams, the Mets, Pirates, and Padres, he gave up a total of 2 runs in those 3 starts. So, those blow-up outings are going to have a larger impact on your ERA this earlier in the season than it would, obviously later on down the road. So, Teheran's going to be fine. The one thing to kind of look at with him is the declining velocity. He was up at around 91 last year, and we've got him at like 90.1 with that hotter gun this year. So keep an eye on that, but I think it's a minor qualm. If you've drafted Teheran, stick with him.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Julio Teheran?
He's widely inconsistent his entire career. I do want to say that, but one thing I've noticed with Teheran is, I'm glad Ryan touched on the drop velocity. And when that's paired with paired with a nearly 3 times higher walk rate, those two combinations don't go well for me. That kind of maybe alludes to other problems we don't know about. But as far as what you can expect from Teheran, I mean, good luck. Your guess is as good as mine. 2.89 ERA, 4.04 ERA, 3.21 the last 3 seasons. The BABIP for him, 267, 288, 260. This year, BABIP's up at 308 with the ERA at 3.5. Assuming everything's healthy with him, I mean, I think you can bank on 3.3, 3.4 ERA. I think that sounds about right. I mean, the Braves should be a little better. The Braves bullpen right now is horrendous either, so that's not helping them doing any favors in the win column. But Teheran is a really hard player to gauge. I own him in a dynasty league, actually. He's 26 years old. And you kind of think, you keep wanting to think there's more there, but maybe there isn't. And maybe he's just kind of this guy who we don't even really know who he is yet. And maybe he's just kind of the inconsistent guy that's going to be above average to average his entire career. Who knows? But he's kind of a frustrating player to own. And if I had to guess, I'm going to say 3.3, 3.4 is where he's going to end the season. But he'll be wildly inconsistent. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned because I think, I mean, even with the really, really bad outing he had against the Nationals, he still got a 3.52 ERA in the early season. So, I mean, even 70 earned runs put onto his record didn't really kill him that much in terms of the season. First three starts were fine. I think he is who he is. He's going to have, he's going to be solid the majority of the year. You kind of set it and forget it. I'm a little worried that his swing and strike rate is down to a tad bit to start the season, but I'm not quite ready to like panic over something like that this early, as we're still waiting kind of for the rate stats and metrics to kind of stabilize in terms of kind of early season samples. So I'm not worried about Teron. I'm just going to kind of keep monitoring his starts. You know, the one thing I think we need to also remind ourselves a little bit of is the fact that SunTrust Park is not the pitcher's park that Turner Field was. So that
this is true.
You know, yeah. That he may have some more issues while it hasn't really manifested necessarily yet this year. He may have some issues with home run, you know, a few more issues with home runs than maybe we've seen in the past because the home ballpark's not as safe as it used to be.
He has always had big platoon issues too. Mm-hmm. He has a tough time getting lefties out, and that hurts.
So, it's, you know, maybe if you've got a team that's stacking against him like that, maybe you want to, especially at home, you may want to avoid that. You know, he just may not be the guy that you kind of set and forget every start. But I think for the most part, at the end of the year, you're going to look back and be like, okay, you know, he was fine. He wasn't great. He didn't win me a league, but he also didn't lose me a league. So he's going to, yeah, you know, more than likely give you 180 to 200 innings. They're going to be fine. They're going to come with enough strikeouts that keeps you competitive in the category. So I'm not too worried yet on Julio Teheran. All right, let's talk about Carlos Correa, who started off the year dealing with some injuries and a slow start. Other than that, Ryan, any concern on Carlos Correa?
Not at all, and this is from someone who has basically shat on Correa his entire career so far because he's been so overhyped because of that rookie season. He's basically been, from a pure skills standpoint, Correa's basically been the same hitter 2015, 2016, and so far in 2017. Decent contact. I think he's a, you know, like 270, 275 hitter. No more than that, but also no less. He's been BABIPed big time early on, like a 210 BABIP, and he's making as much contact as he did in the first two seasons. So no issue there. He's making plenty of hard contact. His fly ball rate's actually up. And no steals on the season, which is a little, really no stolen base attempts, which is a little concerning. But again, we're 3 weeks in. He's going to be fine. I actually think I'm higher on Correa now than I ever have been. If his owners are getting impatient, I still expect, like I said, like a 270 average with 20 homers, 15 steals, and that's a great player. If people are getting frustrated because they spent that 16 ADP on Correa, I would pounce on it. He's still just 22. Sky's the limit for him.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Carlos Correa?
He was kind of probably a little bit overdrafted in redraft formats, but you can't be worried about him. I'm pretty much echo everything Ryan said. Despite the struggles, he still cut down the strikeout rate from last year. The walk rate, yep, is still above average. It's a little bit lower than where he has been typically, but it's still fine. And he's been getting BABIP, like you said, 208. I mean, come on. I'm not worried about Correa one bit. If you have an impatient owner, which I don't know why you would at this point, I'd maybe make the move. Maybe you can get if you have Eric Thames, you can pull this deal off. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not worried about Carlos Correa at all. I would love to do a deal like that, Thames for Correa. I think that would be a fantastic offer because someone might actually bite on that. got to remember, too, with the kind of struggle to start the year, aside from the BABIP issues, he's dealing with injury issues. You know, he got hurt.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he missed, what, like three or four straight games? Dealing with a nagging injury. He's back now. He hit a home run the other day. I don't think there's any reason to be worried about Carlos Correa at all. All right. Then we have Marcus Stroman. He's in the cold player list. And of course, as soon as I do that, he goes out and throws a complete game against the Angels. And that gives him his second complete game for the season. So no longer cold Marcus Stroman. What are your thoughts on him, Matt?
See, Stroman's an interesting guy for me. I've really never been as high as a lot of people are on him.
As high as me?
I forget how high you are on him, to be honest. Probably. I mean, he doesn't get enough strikeouts for me to get drafted where he does. I mean, he was going around guys like Carlos Martinez and stuff, which I'd rather have Martinez because of the league and the more strikeouts and stuff. And I mean, Toronto is not an easy place to pitch, and it's personal preference, I guess. I'm not a Stroman hater. I don't want to say that, but I mean, he doesn't get enough strikeouts for me to be drafted where he has been, and that hasn't changed. The strikeout rate's actually only 5.5 per nine right now, which is actually pretty terrible. It's only 29 innings, but he's getting the ground balls, really heavy ground ball percentage, which is right in line with his career. Home run per fly ball, again, he's keeping the ball on the ground, not getting hurt too hard there. So, and it's worth noting, he's still peripherals are still good, even despite Josh Donaldson, probably the best defender on the infield, being out most of the season. So the infield defense should get better around him, which should help him. A little bump for the short term, or the rest of the season, I should say. But as a personal preference, I'm not a Stroman guy. He gets lumped in. I think he's he's wildly overrated for me, but that's just my opinion.
Ryan, what are your thoughts on Marcus Stroman?
Yeah, maybe I'm one of those guys that overrates Stroman, because I love the guy. I have a bunch of shares of him. I love the floor, the ground balls, and the lack of walks is, you know, that really cements such a great foundation for Stroman. That's been the case this year, too. I talked about kind of the one bad start earlier with Tehran. Same deal with Stroman. Stroman gave up 6 runs to a pretty damn good Boston lineup, and 4 runs total in his other 3 starts. So, not concerned at all. Obviously, the complete game last night is a good sign. Matt, you mentioned this, the missing bats. That's the one thing so far this season. I kind of hedged on Stroman. He made some nice gains with his swinging strike rate in the second half of last season. 11%.
Haven't carried over yet. Yeah. Yep,
no, it has not carried over. It's actually gone back down to where he was as a rookie when he posted like a 7.6 strikeouts per nine. So his breakout potential solely hinges on his ability to miss bats. You know, you're going to get the ground balls and the lack of walks with a good ERA. Is he going to take that next step? He's got to miss more bats, and we'll see. So far, he hasn't this year.
Still super young, and I'm not closing the book on him. But like I said, for the draft price he's going, I'd rather get the strikeouts taken care of, and I'll get that somewhere else.
Yeah, I've always liked him because I think he's one of those guys you can pair with one of those high strikeout relievers, and
that's true. Yeah,
Andrew Miller. Yeah,
or Betances, or one of those guys, yeah. You know, and then you've got an elite pitcher between the two. So I was super high on him last year. I paid the price for it, but I really liked what I saw at the end of the season last year. He made some mechanical changes that really seemed to improve his overall game. You know, the one bad start against Boston, that's going to happen. You go up against a good team, they get hot, they crush you. Nothing you can do about that, but I mean, other than that, he's, you know, pretty much put up just pretty stellar numbers so far this year outside of not really having the strikeouts. I think they'll come through the season. So I'm not worried about Marcus Stroman at all. And actually, if people, and obviously after the complete game, you can't buy. Your chance was to buy after Boston, unfortunately. And we just didn't get to record in time to tell you to do that. So
should have had an emergency podcast.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna start doing that. I'm just gonna once someone gets bombed or has a great day, we're just gonna call a podcast. All right, that is gonna finish us out for this episode. Ryan, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely, guys. It's a blast as always. Love it.
Go ahead and tell people again where you reached on Twitter, and then give yourself some plugs over at Baseball HQ.
Yeah, just hit me up at RyanBHQ. I'm on there all the time, and happy to talk, you know, whatever. with anyone. So find me there, and then check us out at baseballhq.com. Sign up for our Friday newsletter, and you'll be set to go.
And Matt, tell people where you reach and what you're working on.
MD Tomp, FWFB, and unfortunately right now I'm working too much. My work schedule calms down in the next week or so, so hopefully we'll get some more articles out of me. I've been slacking in that department, and rumor has it might get fired, so who knows?
Somehow I doubt that, because that just means more shit I've got to do. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read anything I write over at Fangraphs or on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. On Fangraphs, I'm doing 4 to 5 articles a week. I do 4 of the Roto write-ups, which people are really seeming to enjoy. And then I'm doing, then I do 1 kind of random weekly article if I have time, because the Roto write-ups are actually taking up more time than I thought they would. And then I've got a special announcement that I'm not quite ready to announce, but coming soon, another project from me that I think you guys will definitely enjoy. So kind of stay tuned for that. Hopefully we'll get to announce that possibly on Wednesday or definitely on Friday. So definitely listen for that. And then you can always give us a 5-star review. It really helps us out. And like you heard at the beginning of the episode, if you do, that will get you entered in to win one of our free t-shirts from either the Rec Room or the Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear that I purchased. So do that. Get it in. And we'll probably do another drawing for that in about 2 weeks' time. So, yeah, that's going to wrap us up for this episode. For Ryan, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.